from WNYC Studios. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Friday, May 26th. Yesterday, Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the far-right group, the Oath Keepers, right, was sentenced to 18 years in prison after the conviction on seditious conspiracy for his role in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Now, while Stuart Rhodes faces the consequences of his actions on the public stage, his ex-wife, Tasha Adams, feels she's to blame. At least that's what she told Anna Sale, creator and host of the WNYC podcast Death, Sex, and Money, and Michael Loewinger, correspondent for WNYC's On the Media, when the two interviewed her about her experience of being married to Stuart Rhodes for two decades. During their time together, Tasha suffered from Stuart's abuse. She supported him through school, tended to his wounded eye after he had shot himself, hence the eye patch, if you know what Stuart Rhodes looks like, bore his children, thus making him a, quote, family man, and helped him through the founding of the Oath Keepers. Heck, she even picked the organization's name, the Oath Keepers. Tasha provided all of the crucial reproductive work, shall we say, that allowed Stuart to seize enough political power to lead an attack on the United States Capitol. Anna Sale and Michael Loewinger describe this story as an example of the private origins of far-right violence. So let's get into the story with both of them now. What a treat to have the two of you together, Anna and Micah. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. Welcome back in each of your cases. Hello.
Hello.
Hey Brian. Thank you.
Michael, let's start with you. You have an episode of On the Media coming out today in which you talk about being subpoenaed to testify during the Oath Keepers trial. And yes, listeners, if you don't know, On the Media's Michael Loewinger was a witness in the Oath Keepers trial. When you were there, you saw Stuart Rhodes in the flesh. Can you introduce us to Stuart at the level of impressions that you had of him before meeting his wife and reaction to his sentencing?
Sure thing. Yeah, I've been interested in the Oath Keepers for a while. As you mentioned, Stuart Rhodes founded the group shortly after Barack Obama was elected as president, which I think communicates a lot about the reactionary psyche that allowed somebody like him, this kind of charismatic strongman, to take hold and recruit members. He is the kind of guy who would sort of wax poetics about the Constitution and about conservative values. But underneath that, to people who followed closely, there were, you know, very troubling conspiracy theories about gun control, about left-wing political groups, and election denialism. And I think that he is certainly not the only kind of militia leader or thinker that brought us to January 6th, but I think that his particular charisma and ability to manipulate people helped sort of whip up the violent frenzy that we saw in 2020 and then, of course, on January 6th.
And we'll bring Anna in just a minute. But, Micah, how did you meet Tasha Adams and why did you decide to tell this story about her relationship with Stuart Rhodes and to get Anna Sale involved?
Sure. Yeah. So I'd been tracking militia groups for a couple years prior to speaking with Tasha Adams. She and I got on the phone shortly after January 6th when I saw that she was kind of opening up about her experience with the Oath Keepers and with Stuart. And I was digging into the group at that time. She struck me as a very open person who was who could teach us, as you mentioned, about the kind of domestic life, what it's like to be close to somebody like Stuart Rhodes or like a militia member or somebody who had been deeply radicalized in the lead up to that day. I am very interested in militias, and Anna Sale is really an expert when it comes to digging into thorny, personal, hard to talk about topics. So it seemed like a natural collaboration.
Yeah. So, Anna, from your perspective, why did you think this was a story for Death, Sex, and Money, which does have more of a personal life focus, not so much things like January 6th and the Oath Keepers trial?
Well, I think, I mean, to me, the work that Micah and I have gotten to do together gave me a really deep sense, a very intimate portrait of manipulation and how manipulation works and how control works. And I think that in the public sphere, as we're trying to figure out as media, as journalists in the media, and also as citizens, who we can trust. I thought like this was a really interesting window into that by looking at this marriage and looking at Tasha in this moment. She left this marriage with Stuart Rhodes back in 2018. The divorce was just finalized in the last week. So she has been in this limbo for a number of years. And during those years, she has been trying to sort of piece together the narrative of what happened to her and what happened to her family. And it actually started, Brian, this reporting project together. Micah and I were talking at the WNYC holiday party, and he said, I've been in touch with Tasha Adams. And also I've learned that one of the people that she reached out to when she was leaving the marriage and trying to sort of gin up her confidence was she was in touch with Kelly Jones, the ex-wife of Alex Jones, but I'm not sure they've ever talked together. Do you think that would be an interesting story? And I said, yes, I think we should learn more about that and also to hear what they have to say to one another. And so that was also part of our reporting, was getting together on a video call and hearing them talk together.
So fast forward, the two of you end up meeting Tasha in person in Montana, and she gets into talking about her relationship with Stuart. We're going to play a couple of clips in a minute. Listeners, these are really interesting from this OTM DSM. That's our shorthand here for On the Media, Death, Sex, and Money collaboration. But I want to ask you one thing about what she said to you first, because you describe this phenomenon of Tasha's world shrinking while Stuart's expands, which reminds me of that saying, behind every great man is a great woman. And of course, it's outdated and cringeworthy at this point, but it's a historically normalized notion, we might call it. So in what ways were Tasha's world shrinking, and I'll throw this to you, while Stuart's expanded as he was becoming the prominent founder of the Oath Keepers?
In a lot of ways, but I will tell you the detail that really stuck with me is early on in our interview together, she told us that from the time she was just getting together with Stuart Rhodes, she was 19 when they met, up until her 50s, she didn't go see a doctor. And during that time, she had 6 children and also lost an infant. And all of those births, she had help from midwives who were friends of the family, but she was not engaging with the healthcare system. And so just imagine that, like, you know, this is during a time when Stuart Rhodes is a student at Yale Law School while he's clerking, and she's not going to a doctor because of, you know, this sort of sense of there are systems that this family did not engage with. And so that really stuck with me as a sense of like just how isolated and cut off Tasha was in this marriage.
Do you want to continue on that at all, Micah?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's well put. And I think that Tasha found herself in a precarious position where, on one hand, the family was in this, you know, deep economic precarity. Stuart had trouble holding down a job. He was irritable. He would, you know, allegedly scream at people and get fired. And so she wanted stability for the family. And I think on the other hand, in the early stages of the Oath Keepers, you know, seeing her husband, supporting her husband through the early stages of running a, you know, political organization, I don't think she quite had a handle on the paranoia and the vigilantism that Stuart Rhodes was peddling in even, you know, 10 years ago. And so we got a really complex portrait of somebody in a difficult situation.
So, Anna, here's a clip where you asked Tasha to talk about the kind of physical abuse that she endured in her relationship with Stuart Rhodes. You had asked that question, and here's what she said.
So he would never outright punch you, but he would do other things to hurt you, you know, because he always wanted deniability. He always saw himself as a great man, and being undeniably abusive didn't fit into that, though he would break out of that sometimes. But he would always, most commonly, he would want to do martial arts with you. And then you would just get beat to really, you know, with sticks or whatever, you know, and just, oh, sorry about that. But how often and how hard you got hurt correlated directly to how upset he was with you over something.
All right. And listeners, you will hear that we bleeped out a word there that you can't say on the radio, even if you can say it in a podcast. But Anna, what do you make of him considering his public image when deciding how to abuse his family members and of this internal battle over how he wanted to be seen versus who he actually was?
I mean, I think we should say we reached out to Stuart Rhodes' attorney and he declined to comment as we were reporting this episode. But that was sort of Tasha's kind of the way she described him, that it was difficult to pin down, like, for herself for so many years, whether this marriage was rotten at the core or whether there was something she was sort of just what was going on, you know? And she credits that with Stuart's savviness, you know, that he is a very smart man. She told us many times he's a very smart man. And what was interesting, cast forward to the federal criminal case, what she described listening in was she said it was so interesting that he could not pick his own audience, that so much of his collection of power and the raising of his profile was figuring out how to find just the right audience and how to speak to them so that what they were hearing, something they could hear and agree with. And that then comparing how he described himself in his court testimony to the records of text messages, there you saw the contrast and there you saw the lies and there you saw the real criminality. And so I think that she was having that experience inside a controlling, abusive marriage.
And Micah, Tasha noted that when recruiting members of the Oath Keepers, Rhodes targeted people who were also wrestling with wanting to be seen as a great protector, a great family man, while simultaneously dealing with maybe PTSD or drug abuse, very private issues that could seemingly prevent one from embodying their values. Why does this split within oneself kind of prime someone for right-wing indoctrination and perpetuating domestic violence, if that's how you see it, if that's how Stuart Rhodes saw it?
Well, when it comes to Oath Keepers recruitment, it's worth keeping in mind that Stuart very purposefully and openly targeted current and former police and military, people who had, quote unquote, taken the oath to defend the Constitution. There's a lot of distortion in the way that he spoke about the role of police and military, but he was clearly zeroing in on a sense of purpose and higher calling that these people had already exhibited in their life. If they had left the military and were experiencing PTSD, they may still think fondly upon the time when they did something great for their country. There, a lot of people have spoken about in analyzing militia recruitment, you know, looking for the hierarchy and the purpose that comes from being in a militia, where you have a leader and you have you have little cells and it feels like the service that you would have committed. We can't say for sure, you know, whether all of his recruits had violent histories with anyone around them or PTSD, but he clearly tapped into something that's in the conservative mindset, which is protecting what are seen as the great American ideals. And there is a universalism of that that I think is dangerously applicable to public violence. Sadly, somebody like Stuart Rhodes, I think, had a clear vision of that.
Something remarkable is how Tasha wasn't granted access to doctors during her time with Stuart. You mentioned that briefly before. She birthed all of her children at home, you report, with a midwife. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but she discussed how her pregnancy complications led to her emotional rupture from her relationship with Stuart, if these weren't her choices as to how to birth their children, specifically one incident where she was experiencing a miscarriage and Stuart essentially broadcast this experience live during a call with the board of directors of the Oath Keepers. She describes it as 10 guys on a speakerphone while she's learning that she's in the process of losing her baby. So here's a clip. And listeners, this is a little difficult to hear, but worth it. Listen.
It was a real shake-up moment because I always told myself that deep down under the surface, Stuart is a kind, loving person with this gruff exterior. And when it really, really counted and I really needed it, this kind person would show itself. And then when I really needed it, he's just irritated that I'm, you know, staining the carpet with blood. And then again, 2 years later, I had a full-term little girl who didn't live. And it was the same thing again. He didn't care. And that was the very, very ending of thinking that he had any type of emotion whatsoever toward other people.
I can't imagine Anna hearing the story of her miscarriage being broadcast live at an Oath Keepers board meeting. It's just so disturbing. What do you make of that incident in the context of their marriage? What does it shed light on? It is so difficult to listen to.
I think what I hear there is you hear her describing the moment where the story changed internally for her of, is this a man that I'm helping to become a better version of himself? Or is this a very cruel man who can't love me, can't take care of me the way that I need? And you hear her describing those two moments as when she realized that this wasn't a marriage that she wanted to be in anymore. And then I think we should think about that it was years before she felt like she could safely extract herself and her kids from that environment. That's what I, speaking about the isolation that you brought up before, just mm-hmm. that sense of isolation, it's physical isolation where they were living in Northwest Montana. It was financial isolation. It was transportation isolation, just the difficulty of getting out of the house and getting away. And of course, at the root of it was the fear of her own physical safety, if she couldn't safely leave, or if she would somehow lose her kids because of Stuart's ability to manipulate the family court system. So those were the stakes for her. And so she knew from that moment, those two moments, very painful moments, that she needed to get out. And then it was a long process of figuring out how.
And Micah, from what I understand from your piece, it wasn't even like a coincidence that he was on a board of directors call with the Oath Keepers and she happened to be having a miscarriage at that time. It was like he orchestrated it to have this board of directors call, knowing that this was going on, somehow for political gain. Is that overstating it?
I don't think so. I think that he was just very difficult to work with. He was erratic. He was irritable. I think that at that time, as Tasha told us, even, you know, the board of directors of the Oath Keepers, the organization that he started, were kind of getting sick of him. And this offered him an opportunity to appear sympathetic at a time when he needed it. And I think that's part of why post January 6th, Stuart Rhodes is kind of persona non grata within his own movement, because he burned so many bridges on his way to the top. I think, unfortunately, that may offer a bit of an excuse to the Oath Keeper chapters that are still around all across the country, just to say, well, you know, Stuart, he was just the bad guy. He was crazy and he got off plan, but that doesn't represent who we are. So it kind of cuts both ways.
And a last word from you, Micah, on Tasha's politics. I was wondering this at kind of, you know, the beginning of hearing that you two were doing this, like, and what she went through with Stuart Rhodes personally. Does she agree with his out there politics? And I think you came to the conclusion that she doesn't know what she believes.
That's right. Yeah. Early on, I think she was sympathetic to a kind of, you know, broad libertarianism. And I think that's how Stuart probably described himself very, very early on. And nowadays, I think that, you know, she is pretty disgusted by what the Oath Keepers, you know, became, what they did at January 6th, what they did all along their, you know, 10 years of activity prior to that day. And I think she is, I've heard her say in conversation to us things that I would think of as kind of liberal or progressive. I've also heard a sort of feeling hesitant about moving one way or the other. And I think she's really just in a moment of trying to figure out what her life looks like now that Stuart is has been sentenced to 18 years.
And we're going to leave it there with Anna Sale, creator and host of the WNYC podcast Death, Sex, and Money, and Michael Loewinger, correspondent for WNYC's On the Media. Together, they spoke to Tasha Adams, now the ex-wife of Stuart Rhodes, who I guess has had a bad week in court. He got sentenced to 18 years yesterday for his January 6th involvement, and the divorce got finalized this week, too, I think you said. Just tell people how they can hear this collaboration. Is it in both places? Anna, is it on Death, Sex, and Money?
Yeah, you can hear the episode that Micah and I co-reported in the Death, Sex, and Money feed. And Micah's episode, the hour of On the Media this week that's dropping tonight, right, Micah?
That's right.
Is about this reporting on Tasha and also Micah's experience, his reporting and his experience being a witness in the criminal case against Stuart Rhodes, for which he was convicted and, as Micah said, sentenced to 18 years this week.
Amazing work. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thanks for having us.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.